Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Success Circle Business Accelerator call. This is Lisa Minnini with Accelerate Associates, and I'm so glad you're here. Welcome, everyone. I want to also welcome the new members to the Success Circle. The purpose of the Business Accelerator call, which happens every second Tuesday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time, is all about diving a little deeper into the one aspect of the Entrepreneurial Edge system, that is the systems approach to profitability. So we talk about mastering your inner entrepreneur, systematizing or monetizing your business, or executing your business blueprint. And today, our wonderful guest, Dr. Gance Ferrance, is here to talk about a variety of different things in mastering your inner entrepreneur. But before we get started, I'd like to start us off with some updates and some things that are coming up. So for those of you that are going to be joining us for the Bestseller Profit System, those of you that want to become a best-selling self-published author, here's your chance. The Bestseller Profit System is happening on August 28th. It starts August 28th, but you only have until this Friday, August 15th, to register. Remember to also look at the coupon code in the e-zine for, to get a nice little discount on that program. And I'm real excited about it because it will show you not only how to become a best-selling author, but also how to stay on the bestsellers list and to profit long-term from your book. So I'm real excited about to show you all about that particular system. So join us. Remember, August 15th is the last day to register. And today I want to get into talking about this very fun and interactive session with Dr. Gance, as he's affectionately known. And today you're going to learn how to recognize when you're starting to become less effective, both at work and at home, and before you even succumb to that burnout. He's also going to share how to set and maintain boundaries without feeling guilty, and I've heard that before from many of you, in setting boundaries and why that's important, how to identify the seven me factors that protect you from burnout, stress, anxiety, and depression, how to utilize a quick and simple strategy for making sure you're functioning at your best, and we'll learn the magic question that leads to balance, fulfillment, success, and great relationships. I want to introduce my very special guest, Dr. Gance Ferrance. Or Dr. Gance has been featured nationally on Good Morning Canada. He has an ongoing monthly segment on CTV's New News for the past 8 years, as well as his regular stints on CBC Radio and Alberta Primetime's health and lifestyle segments. He is the former vice president of the Psychologists Association of Alberta. He holds a PhD in counseling psychology and an MA in developmental and educational psychology. He is a media favorite, and you'll know why in just a minute. Dr. Gance presents his information in a very no-nonsense way that he calls Tweed-Free Guarantee. Audiences in the U.S. and Canada enjoy his fun, engaging, and life-changing presentations on beating stress and building superior relationships. Now, you can learn more about Dr. Gance by going to his website at drganceferrance.com, and that's Dr. D-R Gance, G-A-N-Z-F-E-R-R-A-N-C-E.com. And he's also got a free video series on beating stress in your life there. So you might want to sign up for that as well. So Dr. Gance, welcome to the Success Circle.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you here. So you talk about feeding the goose. And I'm very curious about that because I've heard that before about you. So where does the title Feed the Goose come from?
I loved the fairy tales and stories when I was a kid, and one of my favorite stories was the goose that laid the golden egg. Mm-hmm. And so the story, for those of you who don't remember it, is a farmer was poor, and all he had was this goose. And one day he went out to get the eggs because he was going to sell the eggs so he could buy other stuff to eat. Mm-hmm. And he found this golden egg, and he was just shocked. So he took it into the town to test it. It was for real. He sold it, and he started to make money. The next day, he went out, he got another golden egg. The next day, another golden egg. After a while, he was really, really rich, but he was also impatient, and he actually wanted all the golden eggs at once. So he went out, got his butcher knife. He wanted to cut open the goose to get all the golden eggs, but all he ended up with was goose guts, no more golden eggs. So he killed the goose that laid the golden eggs. My feeling is, and most people who hear the story, they think, well, why didn't he just keep feeding the goose, right? I'd want the goose to stay healthy and live a long life. I'd want to make sure it has little goose friends and little comfortable. You know what I mean? I want it to be happy and live forever so I can get lots more golden eggs. So that's where the story comes from, the title comes from. And we are the goose, and we're also the farmer. And the golden eggs in our lives are the things that we care about and the people we care about and what we're able to do to serve those people and things, and so we want to make sure the goose is well fed.
Great idea. Tell us about the impact stress has on performance and health, because I know you've done a lot of work with that. So what has been some of your experiences?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I know this not just from a professional standpoint, but also from a personal standpoint. If you think about when you're relaxed and calm, how well you focus. Like, you know, you think of a sports team, and let's say they don't make the playoffs, for example, and, you know, they're playing kind of bad, they don't make the playoffs, all of a sudden their game starts to improve, and they start to play really well, they start to win games. It's too late, but they're doing really well towards the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, it's because the team was too tight during the regular season, and they were putting too much stress on themselves. But now there's no pressure. You know, they can relax, they can kind of get into that zone, and they can actually have their best performance. So actually what stress does in many cases, not all cases, but in many cases, it actually kills our performance. And that's not just our physical performance, but also our physiological performance and our mental performance and our emotional performance. So we're never our best when we're under stress.
So what are some of the signs that people should be looking for when they're feeling that stress? Because I imagine some stress is good, though, right?
Yeah, some stress is good. I mean, and really, all stress really is a sense of change. Well, there's two kinds of stress, I guess. There's the stress we notice, which is, you know, just a sense of change that happens. So if we, you know, I ask my clients to sometimes cross their arms, and you can actually do this right now. You can cross your arms your regular way and just kind of notice how it feels.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels pretty normal, pretty okay, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, try to cross them the other way.
Wait.
How do you do that? Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, boy, that takes a lot of thought. Okay.
Right.
Got it?
Right. Okay. It feels weird, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It feels awkward. Yeah, it feels really awkward. Yeah.
Exactly. It feels wrong. It feels just strange. Well, that is what you're experiencing there is stress. It's the experience your body goes through when you have a change. So stress itself is not necessarily bad, but too much stress can be very bad. And then what we humans do that the animals don't do is we imagine things that stress us out. Like, I mean, we imagine a whole bunch of stuff, and because we have this great imagination, we worry, and that produces stress in our bodies and our minds as well. So that's where stress comes from, basically.
What are some of the signs, though, that we should look for that maybe we're having a little bit too much of the bad stress on us?
Yeah, well, you know, a couple things that I look for myself and that other people have kind of talked about, irritability is a big sign. You know, if you find yourself short-tempered or you're getting more frustrated than you typically would be with, say, traffic or your family, let's say, or at work, a big sign is forgetfulness or things slipping through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
If you're having difficulty sleeping or maybe sleeping too much, lots of times it's not sleeping enough, like insomnia is usually a big sign. A big thing to look for is like increase in alcohol use or drug abuse or anything like that. But even things like, you know, reduced sexual drive or reduced sense of purpose or that sense of happiness and joy in what you're doing in your life in general, these are all big symptoms of stress and or burnout and or depression.
So are there ways to protect ourselves from stress?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, there's some basic things that I think go into just good living in general, and and anything that makes your body and mind healthy is going to protect you from stress. So things like exercise, sleep is so important. It's something that is really undervalued in our Western culture, but it's the foundation of all good health and all good stress relief. The World Health Organization actually said that, I think it's by 2020, sleep is going to be the number two health concern in all the industrialized nations because we're just not getting enough of it. So that's
You think of how on everybody is 24/7, it's like, shut off those cell phones.
Oh, yeah. And that, you know, it's funny you say that because that's another good way to protect yourself from stress. And obviously we have to stay connected at some point, but we don't have to always be connected because I think with the advent of the smartphone, we're basically on call to everybody all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
And we never really have that sense of being free or being able to lay down. This, you know, one of my clients called it unfettered time, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to have freedom to do whatever you need to do. So, you know, once a week, once a day, even if you can manage it, shut off your phone. You know, put a little message on there saying, listen, I'm out of service for the next half hour or next day or two, and I'll get back to you when I'm back in service.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, or set up office hours for people. You know, let them know that I return texts and calls and emails during this block of time. Anything outside of that, you have to wait.
Well, and don't you find that people, it's like the bell ringing and the dog salivating kind of thing. When there's a ding on the phone, people are instantly looking at it. And I see that even in really young kids that are looking at their cell phones. I'm thinking, shut it off. You don't have to answer right away.
Exactly. We've become slaves to it instead of it serving us. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a little concerning, too, because as they grow up and being able to manage some of that and protecting themselves from some of that stress.
Yeah, well, you know, it is kind of scary when you really think about it long term, because most of us who are on the call now never grew up with this technology.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really come in the last 10 years or so. But you know, like my kids and most kids, this has always been around, right? They don't even
mm-hmm.
know when they've never had an experience of life without an iPhone or iPad, right?
Right.
And so it is important to teach them how to manage the technology effectively, because when you're distracted like that, every time you're distracted, it takes more of your energy to get back on task. And if that's happening often enough, it's like death by a thousand cuts. So every little piece of distraction pulls your focus away, and it takes more energy, more stress to get you back on task, and it adds up at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
The really hard thing for kids is they're actually, since their brains are still growing, it's growing based on this type of activity. So they're, you know, it's almost like we're training them to be distractible and
mm-hmm.
training them to be stressful as they grow up, because this is now normal to them.
Mm-hmm. And even as adults are having a hard time staying present, staying in the present moment. I see that quite a bit. Or people are having dinner. I just read a report about people having dinner, and this one restaurant hired a consultant to come to see why, was it the training? Has their training changed? But it just seems like the lines at the restaurant were so long. And what they found was that people were taking pictures of their food, asking the waitresses or waiters to take pictures of them. So people's time at the table were longer, not necessarily because they were interacting with each other, but because they were on their phones. And so they found this whole thing. It wasn't about the training of the waiters and waitresses. It was the interaction with the phones and technology, which I thought was really very interesting and disturbing all at the same time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because it's like, you know, we'd rather report on what we're doing than actually enjoy what we're doing.
Exactly. So have you found a healthy order of priorities that people can use?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, this, my research, let's call it, really came out of my own personal experience, because I have unfortunately burnt myself out like a couple times in
Mm.
my career, and it wasn't pretty actually. One time I was doing a lot of traveling, and I was kind of doing this little circuit in northern Canada here on the roads. And what happened was, I'd had a headache for like, I don't know, probably like 2 weeks, and never really paid attention to it. But then one day I just woke up and I had a splitting headache. I woke up, I didn't know where I was, didn't know what was going on, couldn't really orient, and it was scary. And I kind of thought I had a stroke or something, right?
Yeah.
But I didn't, unfortunately. I figured out where I was, so I actually called and canceled all my appointments for that day and just kind of went back to bed for a bit, then got up and drove home. And that was a big wake-up call for me because I realized, look, I think I was probably like, I don't even think I was 30 yet. I think I was like 28 or something like that, 28, 29. And I said, if I'm going to be doing this at this young, then that's not good for my longevity, much less my performance. So
Yeah,
I
if you
had
even have longevity, right?
Well, that's right,
Yeah.
exactly. So I said I had to do something different. So what I came up with was an order of priorities that actually puts me in the center. And when I say that, a lot of people kind of get uncomfortable with that because it sounds very selfish, but it really is like this. If you think of it as an energy tank, or better yet, like a New Year's Eve, you see those champagne glass cascades, and the guy goes to the top glass, he fills up the top glass and lets it fill until it runs over. What happens eventually? It fills over, runs over, and fills all the other subsequent levels, right? So you want to think of it that way. So if you are in the center, then the next layer out is your partner if you have that person in your life, and the next layer out after that is kids if you have them, and then after that is extended family and friends, and then after that is work. Because what happens is, I've found that if you put anything but yourself in the center, the whole system collapses. You won't have the energy to run everything else. But if you put yourself in the center and actually make sure you make feeding your own soul and your own spirit and your own health a priority, everything else gets taken care of.
So this is the healthy order of priorities.
Absolutely. And you could, another way to think about it is putting gas in your car. You want to put your gas in your car before you go on the trip, not wait till you've done your trip to reward your car with gas.
So you talk about me factors. Are these, this is part of the me factor?
Well, the me factors actually go into how do you feed that center circle? How do you pour energy into that center tank, that me tank? And the me factors, I've identified seven of them that actually
Oh, great.
can feed you.
Can you tell us more about those?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So the first one is physical. And with physical, I just mentioned that a little while ago. Sleep, number one. Eating. Well, be well and regularly, because what happens is when we don't get sleep or we don't eat regularly, our body interprets that experience as stress or as a threat, and it turns on the fight or flight response in our bodies, and then all sorts of stuff goes wrong after that. Our immune system gets taxed too heavily. Our hormones go out of whack. For those of us trying to lose weight, you can't actually lose weight if you're not sleeping or if your body is under stress. It's like actually impossible. Your hormone balance is the opposite, actually makes you gain weight.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Yeah. So physical, when you look after yourself physically, that's one of the me factors. And it's interesting, they've done research now, and they find that intense exercise, especially resistance training like weights or those sorts of things, are one of the best treatments for depression and anxiety, even more effective than a lot of the medications out there. So definitely something you want to engage in.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so physical is the first me factor. Okay.
Yeah,
What's the
and
second
another
one?
one is emotional. And so with that one, it's basically looking after your emotional health. And this is something that's often overlooked because we don't usually pay attention to this dimension in ourselves, but it's allowing yourself to have your feelings, basically, and doing things that will feed that aspect of you. So things that bring you joy, things that make you happy. One of the things that I work on with my psychologist is playing. I didn't play a lot when I was a kid. I had a kind of a rough upbringing. So now I got my own kids. I'm a big kid, so they love that, right? I get to play with them like, Daddy's a big kid just like us.
But that feeds your emotional well-being.
Absolutely. Feeds your emotional well-being. One of the things that I recommend people to do is journal. It's something I do myself as well. Keeping a journal and giving yourself permission to write down however you feel, the good, the bad, the ugly, and, you know, knowing that this is a private thing. It's a private journal. If you're really scared about somebody reading it, then destroy it after you write it. But you need to give yourself space to express that and not keep it inside, because it takes energy to contain that. It's like, you know, I think about Ghostbusters and the, you know, ectoplasma containment unit. It took a whole bunch of pressure, a whole bunch of energy and electricity to keep all the ghosts locked up inside that thing. And as soon as you turn it off, they all escaped and rove around New York, right? So you don't want that situation in your life either.
Right. So. That's a great analogy. Very, definitely paints a picture.
Yeah.
So number one, physically. Number one, emotional. What are some of the other me factors?
So another one is intellectual, and you know, this one is really important, especially as we start to age. Well, it's important even when we're not aging, but when you use your brain is like a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. And when you can do things that are challenging to yourself, new things, novelty actually is another great treatment for depression, especially depression and even anxiety. So you want to learn new things, have different projects. One of the things that some of the research is saying is that people who play music, like musicians and singers and that sort of thing, tend to have an incidence of Alzheimer's and age-related dementia. They tend to have much, much, much lower incidence of these things in the general population, like significantly, several times lower than the average individual. So, you know, take piano lessons, start to sing, do something that's going to kind of feed that intellectual capacity, and that's going to help you to, you know, be able to use your brain longer, have a better life, and it's going to help you to ward off stress now and in the future.
Perfect. So physical, emotional, intellectual. What's number four?
Spiritual. So this one, I think we all have a spiritual dimension that we need to have fed. And there are lots of ways, lots of different ways to feed it. And I want to make a distinction between religion and spirituality, because I think religion can be spiritual, it can feed you spiritually, but only if it works for you, as opposed to makes you feel guilty or, you know, beat up or, you know, is stressful. So a lot of people have religious traditions they grew up in, and that's awesome if it works for you. If it feeds you, then, you know, definitely I support that 100%. But if it feels like drudgery, or you just do it because you've always done it and there's no real meaning to it, then you want to either rediscover the meaning that's there or find something that's more meaningful to you. Because there is that spiritual dimension definitely needs to be fed, because it gives us a sense of purpose and organization, and helps us to really understand our place in life and the universe and that sort of thing. So one of the things that I like to do, I'm actually heading there next week, is go to the mountains. I live very close to the Rocky Mountains, and I love it. I go there, and I really understand my place in the universe when I'm next to a mountain, right?
Right. Exactly. It's very humbling, isn't it?
That's right. And all that stuff I was stressing about, I realized that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, in a mountain's lifetime, they're just a blip on the screen. So.
Yeah, I went mountain hiking up in Canada. Beautiful, just by Grassy Lake and up in the mountains, and just looking out over everything, and just so majestic. And one of the most beautiful sights I've seen. And you're right, it really does give you that sense of where you are in the world. Little microcosm.
That's right.
So we have physical, emotional, intellectual, spiritual. What's number five?
Social. So social is really important. We are social animals. Actually, that's the reason we're still surviving as a species, is because we are social. We need to feed that that need in us to connect with other people. And it's interesting because I was actually doing an interview earlier today, you know, just dealing with that whole, you know, Robin Williams death recently.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, such a sad thing. And we're talking about how people need to feel connected, but they don't, you know, somebody who's in the public eye or has, you know, 1,000 people on Facebook or whatever, it can feel like you're connected, but it doesn't really take the place of deeper connections. So we can be broadly connected, but if we're not deeply connected, we still are lacking, and we may not always understand why, but that's why. And so connecting with good people is so important. And you know, the operative word there is good people too. Okay, so a lot of times we're connected with people we've known for a long time, or people who are related to us, or whatever it is, but they may not always be the healthy people, or the good people, or the people that help us feel good about ourselves or good about life. And so you really have to pay attention to that, and then have the courage to, I would say, prune those relationships that are less than healthy from your life, so that the rest of the plant can flourish.
Well
And so
said.
a good sign of that is, you know, if you see the person's number call up, come up on your call display, and you kind of breathe a sigh, it's like, oh, that's probably a good sign that they're not the healthy part. They may need to be pruned at some point.
They may need to be pruned. I love that analogy. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, but I think at some point that as you develop, as you grow, that maybe the case, you know, you need to prune them. And one big point I think you're making too, that's underneath that is sometimes we need to let clients go.
Oh yeah, I
And
think
we need
most
to prune
people.
back.
Yeah. I know I've had those clients. You know, at one point in my career, I was pretty much chasing everything that looked like, you know, business or profit or whatever. And I learned my lesson the hard way that, you know, some clients are cheaper to let go than to have as clients.
Yeah,
You know.
exactly. Yeah, because they suck up your energy and your, yeah, right.
Yep, absolutely.
So we've got five really great factors, the me factors. What are six and seven?
Okay, so number six is financial. Financial, again, something that's often overlooked, but it is something that's very, very important to our sense of balance, our sense of health, our sense of managing stress. Finance, like money, is the number one cause of stress for individuals, and it's also the number one cause of disagreements within couples. So it's a huge, huge area, and it's also the area that most people don't talk about, and they, you know, definitely don't talk about it with their partners. Talked to my accountant the other day, and says, "Yeah, I hear things from my clients that their spouses don't hear. Spouses
Wow.
never know, you know." And that's scary. And you can understand why it's so stressful and why it causes so much strife within relationships.
Oh, wow. That's incredible.
Yeah. So one of the things I really recommend is that you start having that conversation with your spouse. Also, educate yourself about financial issues. Ask good questions. Read good books. You know, look at good, you know, videos or shows on TV that's going to help to educate you. You know, and with like everything else, you always have to be mindful about what's, you know, what's where the source is coming from, what's the source of the information, and do you trust it? Is it good? But as you spend some time in this arena, you will start to be able to discern what works, what doesn't work, who's trustworthy, who's not, and start to ask higher quality questions.
Yeah, one of the key things that most of my clients are aware of is, especially in the financial realm, is they look at their business blueprint. It's a process that we go through in the Entrepreneurial Edge system, and they systematize. They systematize a regular meeting with their CPA or their accountant to make sure that it happens always, that they're looking at their cash flow. What does that look like? And so they always have a pulse on where they are financially. So I think that sense of that's the me factor is so incredibly important to have the financial me factor.
Oh yeah, and that's a brilliant system you just described too. That's wonderful because yeah, you always know where you are, you're not going to be surprised in 10 years or, you know, 2 months or whatever it is. You're always on top of it. And that what it does also, it helps you be more familiar and more comfortable with that whole topic. Mm-hmm. And so then it is easier to talk to your advisors and also your partners or your spouse or whoever is involved with that. So there are no surprises. You don't have to keep secrets.
Right,
no.
Right. Especially, well, and I'm going to stereotype here, but especially women business owners.
Uh-huh.
It's like, get to know what your finances are. But I've seen it both men and women. But women still want to be of service and want to, give away sometimes their services. It's like, you got to know your return on investment here.
This is the truth. This is the truth. And you know what? Honestly, both men and women, I think, have these issues about, you know, being out of balance and stuff like that. But even the whole me factor process, the whole feed the goose process, typically is more, I shouldn't say more beneficial to women, but women in our culture tend to be socialized to give in a different way than men. Men mm-hmm. give by, you know, sometimes sacrificing at work and, you know, a lot of times their health suffers or their relationships suffer, but they focus on work and making money and a lot, and again, stereotyping, but many women are, they'll feed themselves last, you know what I mean? They'll look
mm-hmm.
after the kids or the husband or whatever. You know, and it's really hard on them, but it's also hard on the people that they're helping and serving, because eventually they're not going to be there to help and serve.
Yeah, great point. Good point. So what's number 7 of the me factor? You'd think we covered all of them: physical, emotional, intellectual, spiritual, social, financial. What's
and
number
the last
7?
Last one ties it all together. It's actually purpose.
Oh.
And, you know, so there's interesting research on the sense of purpose. So they found that seniors with a sense of purpose lived an average of 7 years longer than seniors without a sense of purpose.
Mm.
So purpose is so, so important. And it doesn't matter if you're like, the head of a corporation or, you know, or a company or a country, or if you're, you know, on an assembly line and you're putting widgets in the big widgets holder or whatever, right?
Right.
If you understand how your part plays into the bigger sense of what it is you're doing, and there is a sense of purpose, either in the job or in your spiritual realm or your family or whatever it is, it helps you to organize your life around that, and also helps you to feel like you're contributing. And I think that this is one of the basic needs of humans, is to feel significant in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that really is important to recognize and to feed that aspect of yourself.
Great. That is, and I agree too. Someone that I knew had she's a business owner. She had an elderly parent, and she always, father, and she always gave him a sense of purpose to live toward. Like, okay, Dad, remember, we're going to go to, we're going to go on that cruise next month. Or remember, in 6 months, we got planned to do this, or, you know, so-and-so's graduation. And she was always looking for the next event. So he was living into that event. And I thought that was brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Totally, totally brilliant. And actually, it's funny, because actually my psychologist that I work with, he recommended that same thing for me. So he calls it the 2-carrot theory. He said you always want to have a couple carrots out there that you're looking forward to in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you want to put them in the books and make sure they're there. Like, they should be hard and fast appointments with yourself,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a movie or going on the cruise or doing something you like. But you got to have at least 2. And then as soon as you're fulfilling one, you got to put another one on the books, at least one more on the books. So you always have a couple of things you can look forward to.
Mm. So you also talk about the magic question I that we should ask ourselves on a regular basis. Tell us what you mean by that.
Well, so the magic question is this working for me?
Mm.
Now, why this is a magic question is because it actually brings awareness and consciousness to our lives. And to the things we do and the things we have in our lives. The bottom line is that if it's not working for us, why is it there? You know? But a lot of us do things and have things in our lives because either we think we should, or this is the way our parents did it, or this is, you know, this is what everybody else has. And, you know, I'm a real big fan of well, it actually organizes your life for the rest of your life. And but a lot of people don't do it well. They just kind of trade in their spouse for the big car or another spouse or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so really the midlife crisis is about coming to a place where you wake up one day and recognize that, you know what, how I lived this the first part of my life, I'm not sure if that's working for me, if it's going to work living the next part of my life. I'm unhappy, something's not quite right, I'm unfulfilled. But if you ask this magic question, you get to have like a, you get to plan and strategically use a mini midlife crisis every day or every time you ask that question, just to wake you up so that you can start to engineer your life more consciously going forward.
Wow, great, great question. So, go ahead.
Yeah, so you can actually ask that question about anything, like, is this relationship working for me? Is this job working for me? Is this pair of shoes working for me? Is this car working for me? You know, is this way of thinking or this way of behaving working for me? And working for me would mean being happy, helping me move forward, making me healthy, you know, just helping me be a better person. And if the answer is no, then you have to look at, are there things that I can do to change that, I mean, to, you know, adjust what I'm doing or what I have to make it work for me, or is this something else that needs to be pruned?
You know, I think that's brilliant, and I think the brilliance is in the simplicity of the question, because I can think about, you know, those key questions that as we get into businesses, we have to make these business decisions, and as we're getting into potential partnerships, to ask ourselves, you know, is this working for me, and is there any disconnect in any way that I need to speak up, be fully self-expressed, be the bold leader, to ask for what I want if something's not quite working for me. And I think all too often people settle for stuff because they're so anxious about, you know, getting the business, but really being that bold and courageous leader to ask for what you want. And really, is it really working for you in all areas?
Absolutely right. And it you're right. This is not for the weak of heart. This takes guts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a lot of backbone to ask this. You know, one of my favorite movies is an older movie, it's a Steve Martin movie called Leap of Faith. And in there's a line. He's this kind of charlatan evangelist that goes from town to town.
Oh yeah.
He says, you know.
I remember that movie. Yeah,
it's a good movie. And he says, you know, I have a simple policy. I only do what I want to do. It's a tough policy, but I stick with it.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, some of the most brilliant life lessons come from, you know, funny movies.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So now you also talk about a 1-10 strategy for keeping balanced. Oh, do tell us how to keep balanced.
Well, this one is similar to the magic question, because it's another way to bring awareness to what's going on with you. So I again, all this stuff has been tested in the lab of my life, basically.
Uh-huh.
And so, what happened after I burnt myself out, you know, I think the first or second time, I can't remember, I figured, you know what, I got to have an early warning system with this. This is not good. I can't keep doing this. So I said, if I think about my life as, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being like just, you know, so happy, it's just all rainbows and unicorns, you know, I'm doing backflips, it's wonderful, right?
Mm-hmm.
And 1 being just, you know, I need to be hospitalized, this is not good. 5 is about the center point. I need to rank how I feel on a regular basis, either weekly, daily, even moment by moment, just to see how I'm doing, just to start to get feedback so I know where I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I find for me, if I can stay above a 7, I'm doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
If I start to go below 7, then there is something that I need to do within that week to help feed some part of me. And that's when I go back and I check my me factor list and see what I haven't been doing. Like maybe I haven't been sleeping well, or I haven't connected with friends for a while, or who knows what it might be. And I actually, what I've done, and I've encouraged my clients and students to do this, is make a little self-care menu.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you have is you have a whole bunch of things in each one of those sections that you can do on a moment's notice without having to think about them. And then I just go and I pick one of those things, and I say, okay, I'm going to do this on Thursday, I'm going to do this on Friday, or whatever it is, and I know that I'm going to feed myself in that way sometime during that week. Because if I'm below a 7, if I'm a 6, around a 6, I can do that.
Now, do you have a feed the goose report card?
Well, sort of. I have a self-care menu and a little list with the me factors on it, but that's an excellent idea. So thank you.
You're welcome. This is a little marketing piece for you. But I can really see that, how helpful that is every day in making it part of the ritual, because we talk about mindset systems in the Entrepreneurial Edge system, is creating a mindset system every day that you get into. And some people have different rituals, like gratitude. Some have affirmations that they start their day. And I personally do affirmations and yoga at the same time, because for me, that's what works. But I can see having this visual of not only ranking how I feel every day, but and asking myself, hey, is this working for me? And plus going through those 7 key factors, the me factors, and saying, okay, what's missing? You know, what's missing that, you know, that would move that from a 7 to a 10?
Yeah, exactly. And what's interesting, too, is that it not just becomes the report card, but also becomes the owner's manual.
Mm.
And so, you know, if it's like the regular maintenance, okay, am I making sure I change my oil regularly? Am I making sure I get my 5 meals a day? Am I making sure I get my 8.5 hours of sleep? Am I making sure I get my vacations regularly, or whatever it used to be? And it really does help you, because for me, like that 1 to 10 question, if I hit a 6, like lower 6, I can't wait till the end of the week to do something. I have to do something that day. Right, and that means I got to, you know, take the afternoon off, go for a walk, ride my bike, do whatever. Because if I hit a 5, anything a 5 or below, the things that usually are fun to me now cost me energy to do.
Oh.
No. And most people have had that experience where they get so burnt out or tired or stressed out
present,
or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that even the fun things now seem like work.
Interesting. Wow, that's great. That's a really great way to gauge it. Now, one of the things, too, that you talk about are boundaries. So important to create boundaries, but, you know, sometimes we're challenged by allowing people to step over those boundaries. So tell us about, you know, what are some nuggets of great advice that you have, maybe based on your certain, you know, your own experiences and your experiences with your clients, of course. But how can boundaries help us to be successful, and how can people get more diligent at creating them?
Yeah, boundaries are so, so important. It's that old saying, good fences make good neighbors.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah, and sometimes you got to have bigger, you know, bigger fences than others.
Yep, exactly. Well, here's the deal with boundaries, right? If you can't say no, then your yeses are meaningless.
Oh, say that again.
If you can't say no, then your yeses are meaningless.
Love it. Love it. Oh, that's a tweetable moment, okay?
Yeah. So another thing with that is every time you say yes to something else, you're saying no to something else in your life, right? So it really does, and again, like I said before, this is not for the weak of heart. This is tough, because if you think about, well, if I say yes to this person or these people, am I saying no to my family? Am I saying no to my health? Am I saying no to my future, my children? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, I was so eager to please, and, you know, I got into the whole psychology thing because I want to help people, and I was so helpful that I hurt myself, and I realized, you know, I can't be that selfish, because every time I burn myself out, my wife has to pay for it, my kids have to pay for it, you know what I mean, my future and, you know, their education, different things like that, I have to pay for it, because I'm not available to either make money or to be present with them, or if I'm dead, then I'm really not available, and then they're really going to suffer,
right?
You know what I mean? And so really thinking about, what are you saying no to? If you say yes to this commitment or this person or this endeavor that is knocking on the door looking for your attention.
Wow. Any tips that you've learned in setting boundaries?
For me, it's knowing that I have the permission to set the boundary and that it is a healthy and wise thing. That's the first part of it. Then the second thing is, and I heard this great, I can't remember where I heard it from, but it was from a book, and the author said that no is a complete sentence.
Yes, I think I've heard that too. Yeah, no is a
Right.
complete sentence, right?
So there's no need to justify or to explain or to, I mean, you can, and it's okay. I mean, sometimes it makes sense. It can protect the relationship or whatever. But it's not something you have to do. You don't have to prove why you can't do something or why you're choosing not to do something. You
Right.
have the right to say no because it's your time, it's your energy, it's whatever.
Yeah, and
Okay.
I, you know what I've heard too, something very simple is, no, that really doesn't work for me.
Perfect.
Yeah,
Perfect.
it's just, no, I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me. Yeah,
Yep.
so,
Offering it is fine, but it's like it's you still have to be strong and not move, not budge.
right.
I
So, go ahead.
go ahead. Okay.
No.
I do this sometimes with parents, right? Because I mean, parents have to set good boundaries for the kids to, keep them alive and that sort of thing.
Right.
So I use this analogy or this visualization of a velvet wall. So it's like you've got cinder blocks, you've got cinder blocks, a cinder block wall 6 feet high, three cinder blocks thick, and then in the middle where the holes are, you drive down, really thick rebar, and then you pour concrete inside the holes so it's a nice solid concrete wall. Then you wrap that wall with a foot of memory foam, and then put really plush velvet on the outside of that. So somebody can run at it, they can hit it as hard as they want, and they're not going to hurt themselves, but the wall's not going to go anywhere. And that, to me, that's a good boundary.
Wow. That's a great analogy. Very visual. So you let's kind of wrap this all up because this has a lot to do with relationships and what relationships have to do with success. So share with us, how all of this, if we put this all together, has to do with our personal relationships, our business relationships, and what that means to success.
Right. So I love the line from, I think it's Hamlet. It says, "To thine own self be true, for then thou cannot be false to any other man." If you know who you are, you have fed yourself. You understand the factors that go into you, what makes up a healthy you, and you understand that you have the right to engineer your life in a way that works for you. All of a sudden, you are able to have, well, first of all, you're present. You're a much better partner, whether it's a business partner or a personal partner. You're a much better partner because you have some substance to you. The people who are interacting with you aren't interacting with a ghost anymore or some wishy-washy yes person. There's some substance to you, and it can be nice substance, right? It won't be
Right.
harsh, but there's something that's there. And then what that means is you feel stronger, you feel better, and therefore you have more to give. You have more to contribute to your partnership, to your family, to your community, to your spiritual organization, to the world. And it does make you more healthy and therefore more successful because the truth is, the better you feel, the better you do. And so when you're feeling good internally and you have good relationships, you actually can perform better. Whether it's work or your physiology or whatever it is, you do better at everything you put your mind to.
Now, what's the most one biggest lesson that you learned and share with us, how you learned that lesson? What's the story behind that lesson and how you overcame it?
Okay. So one of the a really defining moment in my life, I think, was my first year in university. So I'd gone to school in a fairly small school. There were, I think, 400 people in the whole school. That was like all of grade 10, 11, and 12. That was the janitor. That was like everybody, right? 400 people. Then I went to University of Alberta, which was 40,000 people. And so, yeah. So
a little different there.
Yeah, exactly. One section of one of my classes was like 600 people, right? So it's like, it was huge. So I remember my first midterm exam that I had at U of A, and it was a physics test. I enjoy physics. I liked physics. I did well in high school physics. So I went and I did the class. They told me about the test. They told us about the test. So I went home. I studied, and it was great. I was prepared. I felt calm. Since my first test, I showed up early like they told me to. So I showed up, and what was happening was people were starting to stress, and everybody was worried, and they're looking around. They're like studying and really looking very harried and fearful about the test. And I didn't feel that. I felt very calm. But then I realized, hey, wait a second. Why am I so calm? Everybody else is stressing. How come I'm not stressing? So I started to stress because I wasn't feeling stressed. Right? So I started to worry. I worried about not being stressed. So by the time the doors opened and I went into the lecture theater, I was full on sweating. I was shaking a little bit. And then, the people next to me are rifling through their books and one girl was crying, I think. I don't know. And it was a harrowing scene. So by the time the teacher showed up with the TAs and started handing out the questions, the test questions, test papers, I was in full panic mode. So I spent the whole 80 minutes or whatever the length of the class was doing this test. So it was four questions on this test. I handed the paper in and I said, oh man, that just didn't go well at all. It turned out that I got 25% on the test. So I ended up having to drop the class. So four questions, you'd think I got one of the questions right and three wrong, but actually I got all of them wrong, but I got part marks on some of the questions by a very generous professor, but I still had to drop the class, right?
Right.
So later, like a few days later after I got my marks, I'm on the bus, I'm going home, and I put my hand in my pocket of my jacket, and there's a piece of paper in there, I pull it out. It's actually the test questions that I'd done on the physics test. So on the bus, in about 3 minutes, no calculator, nothing like that, I answered all four of the questions, and I got 100%. So that day, I really learned that your state, your physical and emotional state, is so, so important. You can know the stuff. You can have all the skill in the world. You can have all the charisma, all the talent in the world. But if you don't have confidence, and if you haven't figured out how to manage your stress level and how to manage your physical and emotional state, your brilliance can't come through.
Mm.
And so from then on, I realized that my number one thing is to manage my own state, and there has to be a way to do that systematically. That's why this whole feed the goose me factor process came about, is because I knew that was something that I could do and I could put in place and put in practice, just like your system to help business owners get through and make sure that all the important things are taken care of. This is my system to make sure that all the important things in my life are taken care of.
Love it. Love it. Now, when you're up against that stress again and everybody else around you is getting, is enrolling in that stress, how do you have a nugget of one thing that you do to separate yourself from that?
Perfect. So the big thing is come to your senses.
Mm.
Okay. So for me, I feel my butt in my seat. I feel the back of my back against the back of the seat, my feet on the floor. Feel my breath moving in and out of my body, even if it's going fast right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. But just feel it and start to pay attention to it. Not trying to fight what's there, but just being aware of it and allowing your body to do what it needs to do in that moment. And what it does is it actually starts to, your body knows what to do much more than your mind knows what to do, and so your body will start to bring you back down, bring you to that place of safety and place of confidence again.
Fantastic. Is there anything that you say to yourself when you're in that situation?
Yeah, actually for me, I realized that, anything I do right now is going to be better than giving in to the fear, right? And what I know is if I do all these other things on a regular basis that we talked about earlier, I've practiced now being calm. I've fed myself in all these different ways. I know my life is working for me. So even if this, whatever this thing bombs, I still have a good life. You know what I mean? It's not going to destroy me. It's just a thing, right? One of the things that has worked for me in the past is to say, you know, whatever it is that I'm doing here, this is just practice for the next big thing.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And, you know, I think an important thing, a distinction that I learned recently is you didn't fail personally. It's not a personal failure. It's just a failure maybe in performance.
Right.
And athletes have a failure in performance all the time.
Yet they
still go on, and they still go to the next race, and they still, you know, go on despite that failure in performance. So, wow.
Well, I heard a great analogy from baseball. They said that you can strike out 2 out of 3 times and still make the Hall of Fame.
That's right. And here in Michigan, the Detroit Tigers are we're trying to remember that very same advice. So, anyway, Dr. Gans, so appreciate the exquisite advice that you gave today. You were so generous. I just want to make sure that we have your website. Again, it's Dr. Gans Verranz, DrGansVerranze.com. And apparently there you have a don't panic button. And when people hit the don't panic button, what are they going to get?
Yeah, you get taken to a page where you can sign up for a free video and email course on de-stressing your life. So I email you several de-stressing strategies, and you know, some are in emails and some are videos, and just things that I've used for the last 20, 25 years, and also things that I've taught my clients and other students to use, and you get that for free and just for signing up for that.
Fantastic.
And then, Go ahead. if they want further tools, you can actually click on the toolbox, and it'll take you to a page, and I've got a special, one of my audios is on special, so it's actually 90% off, so it's like this $5.25 Canadian. So it's Success, Stress, and the Mind Body. It's how your mind and body actually can work for you as opposed to kind of abandoning you when you need it most. And, you know, a lot of people have that idea where they have the perfect comeback to that argument, but they figure it out like 10 minutes after the argument's done.
Right.
So this is a way to have your mind and body work for you instead of against you.
Fantastic. And again, that's called?
Success, Stress, and the Mind Body.
And they can find that where?
When you go to drgansverranz.com, there's a toolbox on the right-hand side of the screen. You can click on that, and it'll take you right to the page.
Fantastic. Dr. Gans, thank you again for coming and talking to the members of the Success Circle. Really appreciate you today. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me, Lisa.
You're welcome, and thank you for coming to the Success Circle. And until next time, create a great life. Bye now.